Welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show that lifts the lid on New Zealand's distilling magic. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf, your guide to the flavours, the people and the inspiration behind our top local spirits. We'll hear what drives these distillers to create their signature blends and maybe discover a new favourite along the way. So whether you're a gin lover or a whiskey wizard, join us on the ride and always keep it classy and drink responsibly. Kia ora, gin lovers and spirit adventurers. Welcome back to Tales from the Top Shelf. I'm your host, Susie Carrig, bringing you the stories behind the makers who pour heart, soul and spirit into the craft distilling scene. Today's episode is a really special one, because the story behind this distillery is what sparked everything for me. When I first read it, I realized this industry is about so much more than just pouring alcohol. There are stories in every bottle, and I wanted people to hear them. That moment led me to start sharing distillery stories over 5 years ago. Back when there were just about 20 or 30 dotted around Aotearoa. It began with a simple gin subscription and over time grew into the NZ Spirit Guide and now the show. Right now, we're raising a glass with York from Queenstown's Broken Heart Spirits. This is a brand born from friendship and loss and now an internationally recognized craft distillery. York, welcome to the show.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to do a podcast with you today, as always. And so to go right into what brought me to New Zealand, I should start my journey as such. You know, the way I grew up in Germany, we have land with farmland, and on these farmlands are different trees, you know, cherries, plums, you name it, you know, apples and pears. And when I was a little boy, my father always collected these fruits whenever they've been good and fermented them with a plum, made a plum schnapps. So actually it's called Zwetschg. It's a different, it's like a damson plum more. And so that's how I grew up. At that time, I didn't really, as a young boy, I didn't really know what I was doing. But and of course, when you're young, you have different ideas of going out and not helping your father picking up this boring fruit. So so this is how I grew up. We had also very little vineyard. When I say little, just 500 square meters, and it was just enough. Was just enough for the family. And you know, in these old days, my grandma, they lived self-sustainable. So everything what they had two or three cows, you know, they had a pig, and they had, so basically they didn't need to buy anything. They had everything what a little farm was giving them. So this is how I grew up. And then later on, I studied electronic engineer, became an electronic engineer, worked a couple of years for Siemens. And beside that, I made a flying carrier and became airline pilot. And so this is when I came in 1999, first to New Zealand, when we flew cargo to New Zealand. And we had a week layover, so I toured around. And obviously met people and they all said, you need to go to South Island. This is much more interesting. And so I booked a vacation with my ex-girlfriend at that time. And we drove through Central Otago, came into the Gibson Valley, and there was a sign, vineyards for sale. And as I said, you know, knowing vineyards from Germany, I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I looked into it and bought this vineyard. And then coming more and more to New Zealand, to Central Otago, to Queenstown, I saw these, when these grape skins are been pressed, they've been went into the compost. And I went like, don't you distill them? You know, that's the why, what, you know? So there's, yeah, to make grappa and brandy and stuff. So I had no idea. So then in 2004, I bought a distillery in Germany and brought it over here and started to make grappas, brandies, you know, like as I did it from Germany, kirsch, plum, and all these kind of things. But the problem was that kiwis at that time, they loved the product but didn't understand the value of the product. So yeah. You know, so anyway, so I looked into it, and with my friend Bernd Schnabel, who was also German, had a distillery in Kelvin Heights. We've been potting around and trying things, and he made actually quite good gin. And I said, but his bottle really sucked. And I said, Bernd, why don't we do something together? And so we talked about 3 years. And once everything was ready and ready to go, he became very quickly ill, terminal ill, and died within 3 weeks. So that was a little bit of a sad moment for me. And took me a couple of weeks, and I went like, I have spent so much time in this, you know, in crafting this, and I really want to do it. So I decided to do it on my own. And obviously we had a different name chosen before. And
what was that name?
Gin Set, GIN/Set.
Right, Gin
like Set. So I didn't really like the name, but you know, when you do a company with four people, you have to do compromises left, right, and center.
Yeah.
And Bernd, old style, German, stubborn, you know, it was, I had to go a lot of compromise with him. So anyway, so that was the reason why I named the company then Broken Heart in memory of him.
Right. And that is the exact story that I fell in love with and wanted to tell the world, that here you had this great friendship and you developed all these recipes together over the years. And then, yeah, sadly, Bernd passed away very, very suddenly. So as you discussed, you and Bernd spent many years perfecting your gin before it even hit the shelves. Tell us what those early experimental days were like in Queenstown against the beautiful backdrop of the majestic mountains and your pure alpine water.
Well, let me start a little bit different. You know, you need to understand at that time I was distillery number 3 in New Zealand, so there was not really much that botanicals haven't been available. So a lot of botanicals I imported myself, brought them. I mean, as you know, I was airline pilot. I brought a lot of botanicals myself into the country. You know, at that time, for example, you didn't get Angelica roots here. So I had to bring them all from Germany and some other stuff, which was quite challenging. And the guys at MPI in Auckland Airport, they knew me quite well, you know, because I came in every month when I came home from my off days with something in my suitcase, you know, and stuff, you know, like orange blossoms that had to be heat treated and then sent to Queenstown. And it was an amazing challenge to get onto botanicals. And that obviously brought me to the point, what can I source in New Zealand, you know? And still today, I mean, there's no juniper berries growing in New Zealand, you know, it's just, and why would you, you know, the best juniper berries come from Italy, from Abruzzo or from Macedonia, you know, it's like you want to have quality and obviously you want to have local products, but they're just not there. So that was one thing, which was a challenge. And then, you know, coming from Germany and, the water is not that good. So what amazed me here in New Zealand was the quality of the water, of the spring water. And I remember when I bought my house, we have there our own spring. And when I tried the first time the water, it reminded me to the Evian water. You know, it had this nice sweetness to it.
Yeah.
And so that was something that was a real bonus. And obviously, you don't want to filter this too much, and I can tell you an interesting story about that. So in the beginning, we didn't filter the water or took the calcium and magnesium out, and our first shipment of 3 pallets to Belgium, they arrived in Belgium and had all this, you know, like like in a water a kettle, you know, this
the white sediment.
And we're like, how is this possible? And then we realized that in the container, depending on where they're loaded, when they go over the equator, they can get up to 60 degrees inside, you know. So that's where we had this fallout of the calcium and magnesium. So I had to find a way to get the calcium and magnesium out, which was not a bad thing at all. But these are early challenges, you know, you don't think about such things. So we have had an amazing learning curve over the last 20 whatever years, yeah. And with little problems like this, yeah, but you can imagine that was a challenge. But again, today, the water is a very important part. Mm-hmm. If you have a spirit at 40%, 60% is water.
Absolutely. And tell us, your water comes from a spring called Paradise. Can you tell us about the history behind
it? Actually, in reality, it's really in Paradise. We have a contract there with the boar. And this aquifer is one of the biggest aquifer in New Zealand and comes directly from the Mount Aspiring National Park. And, you know, this is also important. There is no farming there. So there's mm-hmm. no nitrate and all this kind of thing. So it amazes me all the time when we do the water analysis, how good this water is, you know, and all the requirements today, what you have to check. I mean, in the old days, there was basically not much you had to check. The E. coli was the only thing, but today, you know, you need to check for all metals, arsenic and whatever. So the water is absolutely amazing. And it's really important to have such a source.
Absolutely. And it comes from Paradise.
It's really true. It's comes from Paradise.
Okay. Now, your distillery produces a full range from gin, rum, vodka, whiskey, and your fruit liqueurs like quince and rhubarb. What did you start out making and how did that range grow over time? And when it comes to new releases, how do you create the next one?
Well, there's two things to it. We started with gin, as you know, and I think I'm very innovative. I'm trying constantly new things, and but it's not worth to release something the market doesn't ask for. So it's kind of a demand as well. Mm-hmm. So with the first gin, after that came barrel aged. This was the time, you know, people went into barrel aged. And then obviously the flavor gins was something interesting for me. Can give you a little bit of a story there. Quince, for example, for me is an amazing fruit. It's a forgotten fruit, and but has amazing flavors, and a lot of people don't even know it. And I'll tell you an interesting story how I grew up. We had a little quince tree in my in our family home, and I had to do the lawn, and this tree always annoyed me because for me I could not just grab like an apple the fruit and eat it, you know, like we did with apples and cherries and whatever and plums. So this kind of tree annoyed me, but my mom made the most amazing quince chili, you know, which I really loved on toast, butter and toast and quince chili. So when I came to New Zealand and on my property a lot of quince trees, I just started to experiment around and basically macerated in the gin, and I was surprised about the outcome. And then my grandma made a really nice quince liqueur, which we do today as well, which mm-hmm. is a really, really old recipe. And that's really amazing. And we don't promote it, the quince liqueur, because we just don't have enough. We basically know every tree here in Arrowtown, and we go around every year and get the best fruits we can use. And quince is a very labor intensive fruit because, you know, you have to get optimum ripeness, then you need to get the fluff off. Then we wash it, then they've been cut, the core taken out, because there's quite a lot of pectin in the core, which brings problems later on. And then we we blitz it, and then we freeze it, because the freezing breaks the cells, so you get more flavor out. So, and with that, doing that, we also have no problems with oxidation.
Right. Okay. So now, something else you've been innovative with, you've introduced spirit pouches, which is a really smart idea. They are lightweight, easy to post, and better for the planet. What led you to introduce them, and how's it changed the way that people buy or enjoy your spirits?
You know, during COVID, we had the problem that we didn't get enough bottles, because it's seriously true. And so we had to look into alternative ways. And obviously, we looked into this pouches. I mean, we looked into many ways, but then we saw those pouches and went like, wow, this is actually quite clever. And, you know, you need to understand only 8% of glass in New Zealand gets recycled. A lot of it gets there's no recycling in the South Island. It all gets crushed and for future resource to the landfill, which, you know, we don't need to talk about that, but that's kind of that this will never been retrieved, and why would you? And then what amazed me as well, you know, to make glass, you need temperatures of 1,300 degrees. So it's very energy. You need a lot of energy to produce the glass. Whereas these soft plastic pouches, they are done at 150 degrees. So, you know, so the energy which is needed to produce these pouches is very low. And also soft plastic is fully recyclable, which brought us then to the idea to do this. And of course, less weight, less shipping, you know, as people don't understand, the shipping part became today a very annoying part in your daily calculation. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an idea. A pallet of glass cost me between $500 and $800 just from Auckland to Queenstown. These pouches, we bought about 30,000 pouches. We paid $635 for the 30,000 pouches from China to here, you know?
Yeah. It's sort of a no-brainer, is it?
The savings are massive. Yeah. And this is for us the advantage as well, that we can give these savings to the customer. If you think about just in general, a bottle is $90 and a pouch is $70. So that's a $20 discount for the same product. And for us, we introduced then the bottle for life. So basically you buy a bottle and then refill with a refill pouch the bottle. And today, about 50% of our online sales are pouches.
Wow, there you go. Amazing. Now, Broken Heart has made its way well beyond Queenstown, with bottles now landing in glasses around the world. What has the journey into the export market been like, and how does it feel seeing your spirits around the world?
Well, you know, when I started Broken Heart, for me, I wanted to see a bottle in the bar in Auckland. That was for me my, you know, the amazing part. And obviously, exporting in so many countries in the world, that's quite amazing. And receiving photos from people, you know, on Instagram and whatever, or Facebook, seeing pictures from all over the world is mm-hmm. that's quite, you know, that gives you really proud, you know.
Yeah, no, it is awesome. Now, Broken Heart is now on a new journey with its crowdfunding campaign and plans to expand production and tasting spaces. What excites you most about the next chapter?
What excites me the most? I think it is really important today. People want to see a distillery, want to make a distillery tour and taste the products. Yeah, Queenstown is a very important part in the game. If you think about, there's 2.4 million passengers coming through just on the airport. So having a tasting room and being able to host people there is a really important part, and will give a big advantage to other parts in New Zealand, obviously. And yeah. it's not just international people. It's also, you need to understand, a lot of people just travel to Auckland. That was something which, you know, last weekend in the cloud, a lot of people came and said, oh yeah, I've been to Queenstown, I've been to Gingan, you know. And so that again showed me it is also important for Kiwis to have this kind of experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, domestic tourism, you can't forget about us Kiwis at all. Right, now it's the end of the working week. What is your go-to broken heart drink and how do you enjoy it? And do you make a classic serve or do you sort of invent something new?
Believe it or not, after all these years and trying new things, which I really like, but I always come back to the original gin. And because it's such an easy drinking gin, and when I created it, it was for me important to make a well-balanced gin. Where a lot of gins today, you know, they have one botanical which spikes out.
Yeah.
And there are gins out there, I don't want to say any names, you know, they're very floral. So after, when you drink two gin tonics, your palate is just full, you know, it's just not, mm-hmm. not enjoyable anymore. You want to move to something else. And with our original gin, you can really drink it, you know, the whole evening. So it's not just a one or two drink thing. One of my favorite drinks is still Negroni. I love my Negronis,
yeah,
in different ways. I also love a rum Negroni, believe it or not, with our Ooh. Spiced rum. But yeah, honestly, most of the time I come back to a simple G&T.
There you go. You can't beat the classic, hey?
No.
Well, York, thank you so much for opening up and sharing your story, the heart behind Broken Heart, and for every drop that brought people together in Queenstown and around the world. It's been an honor to listen in and finally share your story that warmed my heart all those years ago with our listeners. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And as always, I enjoy talking to you and looking forward to see you next time.
To the next event. Right, listeners, if you want to explore Broken Heart Spirits and indulge in some of their delicious spirits, head to nzspiritguide.com to see the whole range. Thanks for joining Tales from the Top Shelf. Until next time, support local, stay curious, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories.
That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more behind the bar stories.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.